Episode 65 of This Developing Story. Hello. So this week I have been doing a number of things. Again, Netlify is one of the busiest jobs I've had yet. Even when I was in sales, I did a lot of work, but this is definitely one job that I knew coming in. I would definitely be doing more work outside of the regular 9-to-5. What I actually enjoy a lot about this job is because we're remote, I am actually an early riser. For those of you who know me prior to doing this podcast and when I used to do a blog 3 times a week, I used to wake up at 4 o'clock every morning, and for 3 hours, I would actually focus on learning how to code. And I still kind of do that. I just don't wake up as early. So I wake up at 6 every morning, and I usually get on the computer and usually do something that is new for me, something that will expand my talent. So if, whether it's Go or some new technology, I try new things out. It's almost like my morning workout, lately, instead of doing that, I've actually been working out instead. But then shortly after, I usually start my day at home before I even get in the office at 7 a.m., and which is nice because I get to start my day. People are online because being on the West Coast, we're the latest schedule. So since we have the designer is in Portugal, and we got some other people in Tennessee, they start earlier than even when I get up. So it's nice to have people already online, ready to chat and to go. So yeah, it's been nice. It's been nice adjusting my schedule. I mentioned in the past, I actually moved to a bigger place. So it's still a one bedroom apartment in Oakland, but it's twice the size. And it also includes a garage, which is where I am now recording. Specifically, I no longer have to share space with the rest of the family. I actually have my own space for recording and set up. So that's awesome. This episode actually is going to focus on Corey Grudson. He's actually a guy I met at Agent City Ruby. Yeah, so this conference, it's where I made a lot of contacts, and I've been in contact with him since. And it's also how I got my first job at IZEA too, as well, which is awesome from the contacts I made from that conference. But yeah, wrapping up. So Corey actually gave a lightning talk about how he got his consultancy and the reason he got his consultancy started, to build these small programs and build them in Rails. We do mention it briefly, so I'll wait until you guys can listen to that when we actually bring it up in conversation. But yeah, Corey's a super interesting guy. He's actually from the same county as where I grew up too, down in the Tampa Bay area too as well. So yeah, this small world. We connected originally then, and we've kind of been sort of in contact ever since I've been into programming as well. So hopefully you guys are interested in Corey's story. Also, Corey goes into detail about how he runs his consultancy, which is quite different from our previous podcast. It's been more about the developer, but I found it was more interesting to ask more questions about how he currently is developing and sharing a story as that aspect too. That's the beauty of this podcast. We could be flexible. And without further ado, here is Corey.
Hi, so my name is Corey Grusden. I've been programming for, I don't know, since I was 8 years old. So I've landed on Ruby on Rails is my latest technology that I dabble in, as well as iOS. So I'm a developer from that. But right now, currently, I would say I run a boutique Ruby on Rails and mobile development software company. And we're 100% remote. So as we're doing this, I'm sitting in yet a different city than what you and I had originally first met.
And then, so going back to, you just mentioned you've been programming since you're 8. What did that look like when you started programming?
Oh man, it was a green screen almost. It was an 8286. Man, with the big floppy disks. It was BASIC. It wasn't even QBASIC, it was BASIC. Oh, wow. And it was a lot of linear. So it was, you know, print, you know, first line would be print hello, and then line 2 would say, you know, go to line 30. And then, you'd go down to like line 30, and then the program would continue executing at that point.
So was this something you learned from school, or is this you just happen to have a green screen computer in your house?
It was just something I learned, started learning on my own. The specifics, I couldn't really tell you. It would had to have been something like the README, or there was like a DOS disk that had the README on there. And I remember I was just bored. My aunt and uncle at the time, I was living with them, and they brought home the computer, the PC, and I just started playing games. And I'm like, man, I want to make a game. So that was the initial entry into what I do now. It all goes back to that point.
And did you get a degree in the field as well?
Unfortunately, I did not. There's a lot of people that say, oh, you don't have to get a degree to go, to be a programmer. And that's true. But what I feel strongly now after doing it so long and working with a lot of smart people that did go get a degree. I mean, there are benefits to getting like a computer science degree, just because I would have understood sooner how to manipulate the architectures and whatnot than how long it took me to do it on my own, if that makes sense.
Cool. Awesome. And then you had mentioned that we had met, so I think, what was it, St. Augustine at the Ancient City of Ruby, like almost 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago? I'm not sure when that was.
It was.
Yeah. And you had did a lightning talk, which actually pretty much impressed me, because your talk was drastically different from any other talk that was out there, partially because I came from sales, and like you had a very good pitch for about what you guys do at SoFetch and what you do as far as consulting. Do you remember that talk that you did then?
Oh man, I've done so many of those things.
Yeah,
and they change often.
Yeah, so what it was, you had mentioned that you had a friend that lived in a high-rise apartment, and he had wrote a program so he didn't have to buzz his doorman in whenever he needed pizza. The whole sales pitch was like, that's what you guys do. You guys help other people make programs and get their apps live to production.
Oh, that's so right.
Yeah, it was like such an awesome pitch. And like out of all the talks, even like the long, like actual talks about code and stuff like that, that was one that really impressed me for sure.
Oh, cool. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, it was, it's funny, the guy that actually, now that I remember why I gave that talk or what that talk was about, it was, Tim Pope. He did that to his apartment.
Oh, Tim Pope was the one, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm familiar with Tim Pope from Vim fame.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Exactly.
Awesome.
Smart guy.
Wow. So then you've been programming long enough that you know people like the likes of Tim Pope. You've been doing Ruby on Rails for quite a bit then as well?
Yeah, I think, let's see. I know when HashRocket started is when I started learning Ruby on Rails. Prior to that, it was a mix of, I started out on Perl. And then PHP, sorry, Perl, then C, and then PHP, and then got into some .NET because of the job that I got at the time required, they were on a Windows platform, so it didn't make much sense to be like, oh, well, I only do things that are on open systems. So, to take my first job, of course, I'm going to definitely learn, .NET.
Cool. And then tell me, what's the dynamic look like for SoFetch, I guess the consultancy you guys run remotely, too? I didn't realize you guys were all remote as well.
Yeah, so we're 100% remote. We're all based in the United States. And the reason for this, I mean, there's a lot of companies that are already like doing this, or there are companies moving towards this model now because it's now more accepted. But initially, my main reasons for doing it this way was, I just took all the experiences that I've had working for companies, Fortune 500s, military, boutique shops, startups, my own deal, my own things, and just kind of picked the three or four things that I really liked, and those things won't change. And those things were, 100% remote. I don't want to get on, I don't want to have to travel to go to a meeting because technology is... I mean, we can video conference. I mean, it's just as good at these, at this point. you know, to at least get a project started. And then also, you know, I'm a big believer in family and friends, enjoying, you know, there's a time for work, but there's also, you need time, you know, that balance to go do what you need to. And some of those need to do things are, you know, go to the doctor or go do this thing that just popped up. You know, literally it's today, and you didn't schedule time off, and it's like, well, I don't really care about, you know, if you go do that cool thing that you want to go do today, as long as it, you know, the results, if you said you were going to get something done today, it gets done today. I don't care. Because that's how I, you know, those are the things that were very close to me when I was working. It was, oh, this event is happening, or, you know, a simple example would be this concert is happening and I need to drive down to Orlando and, you know, go to it. Well, you know, you can't do that if you're sitting in an office and just leave, you know, every other day. But you have the capacity to do that and come back and get what you said you were going to get done, then I don't see a reason why, you know, you can't have a sustainable business doing that. And, you know, for the past two and a half years, plus, you know, since we've been growing, you know, it's been, we've been able to, everybody's been able to do what they need to, including myself, if it should pop up. But we do, you know, have our heads down most of the time, and, you know, delivering the results that we say that we're going to do.
Cool. And then as far as I know, I've followed you on Twitter, and you've got quite a few different Medium posts that you put out there, and you tend to travel a bit. Is that the case, since you're a remote company, that you just have more of the flexibility to try out different cities and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's been like this for a while. So the company's been around for 8 years now, and we just got serious, you know, about growing it, like I said, 2.5 year mark ago, to what it is now. But over the past, I guess what you're mentioning is, yeah, I've just been a wanderer. You know, I've been wanting to go, you know, me personally, I've also wanted to go experience these other cities and living in them, you know, meeting new people. Being in these cities allows you to go experience the surrounding areas. And I couldn't do that if I was, you know, working at a place that wasn't allowing me to do that. Or if I did work at a place like that, you know, where I would have to go and sit in a chair, like somewhere else other than wherever I'm sitting currently, you know, it would be more expensive as far as like plane flights go, or just getting to these other places, you know, going to climb some rock. So being able to work remotely has been, you know, amazing, since I can already be in that location and then go do something nearby, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, and that's also like lends itself to a good, you know, Seth Godin was, if you don't read Seth Godin or haven't checked out some of his stuff, you know, he's got a couple of great books. I mean, all of his books are pretty good. But these little things that stick with you, you know, marketers are basically storytellers. So, you know, being able to travel, being able to do these things, or being able to be in these other places and experience it in such a short amount of time while I'm working, you know, gives me the ability to have a lot of stories. I mean, we could sit here for years, yeah. Maybe not years, but, you know, that also helps with, you know, growing a company, because you need to be able to get yourself in front of people. So it's all, at the time, I didn't think of it that way. But looking back, I was like, oh, that's what it, okay, it all the pieces fit together now, and I understand.
Yeah, and, you know, it goes back to also, a lot of these companies are really, like, talking about diversity and, like, diversity of thought and stuff like that inside of companies. And I think not only, like, you need diverse people, but also having diverse, like experiences also can help you, like, in the end run, especially working with customers, like, understanding, like, the way different people live and different cultures around even just the U.S. are, having that diversity, I think probably, I would assume probably helped you in dealing with people and dealing with, like, building different projects.
I completely agree, yes. It's, you know, you can tell a big difference between you know, having a meeting with a VC, a VC in San Francisco or the Valley area versus a VC in the New York area versus a VC in Portland area versus, you know, or even go down that line and say like a, you know, developer or whomever, really. You just get to experience and know the person that, like, the geographic location actually does affect the personality of the people that live there.
So then as far as you mentioned you guys are growing, what sort of like places do your employees kind of make up, like the different cities that they currently reside?
So a lot of the people that I work with are super brilliant people. They've not, you know, they're not taking up residence in those bigger cities or those higher costing markets. Because they want space, because some of them have families, because some of them like going and climbing mountains and being able to take their dogs out and go camping. So a lot of the people I work with are not in these markets like New York City. You know, we did have a couple of people in the Brooklyn, Manhattan area, San Francisco, but majority of them are now out and about in the Midwest, Pacific Northwest, you know, the South, the Southwest, you know, these regions that are lend themselves to having a different type of lifestyle, more relaxed, I would say, in a good way.
Yeah, it's cool. That's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome that you and your company, the Value, like, not everybody wants to live in the Bay. I live in the Bay Area at the moment, but not everybody wants to move here. Not everybody wants to like get rid of like almost a third of their salary on rent. Which is, it gets old after a while.
Oh yeah, I agree. I feel your pain.
Yeah. You did live here. You lived here out here for a little bit too, as well, right?
I did twice. Yeah, Knob Hill and what was the other place? Marina.
Okay. The Knob Hill is pretty expensive for sure, and I think the Marina is still pretty pricey as well.
Yeah, Knob Hill was quiet, so I enjoyed that area. It was just very, you know, it was out of the, it was my little, you know, outside of San Francisco but inside of San Francisco place.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I've been there a couple times. Some good restaurants there. Don't make it up that hill. It's a bit of a hill, especially when you don't have a car.
Exactly. But yeah, it was a great time. San Francisco is a great place. The energy, you know, you definitely need. What I've noticed is one of the problems that we've run into as developers or software developers, you know, in these other markets, there's not as much technology going on. So, you know, and being remote. You know, there's things that we've done internally, you know, training wise or learning wise, and switching up people's roles to kind of give them something different to chew on and learn and keep it exciting. You know, that's one downside, I would say, of working remotely is you really, you know, the thing that gives you joy is also the thing that gives you some pain. So you have to actively go seek out, you know, conferences and maybe go to those once in a while, because these smaller markets, you know, they're not like San Francisco where, you know, you can come out of, you know, you, Brian, can come out of your door, your front door, and, you know, you're going to walk straight into a tech, you know, someone that works in technology that you can have a conversation with about what you're working on or what they're working on and, you know, get your brain cells firing in that manner. You know, when you get out of those markets and into these more remote areas, or less technology dense areas.
Yeah.
You know, that is a problem. Yes. But we've got things that we do that help with that. And we're constantly learning.
Yeah. What are some examples of you guys keeping up to date? Like you mentioned, you guys switch roles a little bit and focuses, but, anything else you guys do internally to kind of keep the excitement alive about what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, we've got our products that we've been building. You know, we've built several of them internally. We've got tools. You know, you can look back 10 years, 5 to 10 years in the software development arena, and there was a role of toolsmith. So these software developers weren't necessarily, they weren't building or working on the business software, you know, the thing that generates the money or that people use to get some job done. The toolsmiths were these developers that could see a manual business process and they would write a script or a program that would automate that one piece, right? Yeah. So we've got, you know, a lot of automation going on internally. So if somebody wants to work on that and take a manual process and automate it, go for it. You know, we maintain and always look at these lists of things that we've got going on that are manual. And, you know, once we get the manual work to a, like, an efficient manner, then that means, you know, it's not that that piece of work is not changing anymore. Like, we've got the process down, so now we can write, somebody can write a piece of software quickly or a script quickly to do that one thing. So we have those. You know, our product, which is the Stand Up Bot, it's the plugin for Slack that facilitates stand up meetings for quite a few customers now. You know, that's an open, you know, if you want to go work on that, go for it. You know, we maintain issues that someone can go pull one and start working on it and put a fix in to the branch, and you know, the next deploy it'll go out. There's other things like marketing and sales. You know, if you want to be, you know, if you want to learn a little bit about the sales process or like how we do sales, you know, we don't mind sharing that information looping someone in on part of or some of that process so they can be learning that. So my job, my day to day is making sure that people are not waiting very long for what it is they need. So that's kind of how my role has changed from software developer to a more management or manager type.
Cool. So if anybody wants to, I guess, reach out and maybe find out more about StandUpBot or find out what you guys do, you guys have a website that you could share?
Yeah, I mean, the StandUpBot specifically would be standupbot.com.
Okay.
You know, obviously our website is sofetch.io, but I mean, I like phone calls. So every time I get the opportunity, I give out the phone number, and if people want to call me, go for it. It's 415-967-3732. And you know, I've done that a couple times before and people will call me.
Cool. Well, hopefully you get some calls from this podcast then.
And that'd be awesome.
Yeah. If you call Corey, guys, let him know that you heard him on the podcast.
Let's do it.
Sweet.
I'm excited.
All right, Corey, thanks for coming on and sharing more about what you guys do and when, how you got into programming briefly. And yeah, best of luck on the continuing success.
So that was Corey's story. Awesome to hear more about SoFetch. Interesting name. I just think of, I didn't bring it up, but I always think of Mean Girls. Yeah, SoFetch. Anyway, so Corey's story. And this week, I forgot to mention, we actually were featured on TechCrunch, Netlify. Check it out. I'll put the link in the show notes, but you can Google Netlify and TechCrunch, and we should come up pretty early. So it's my first experience of seed funding and being on a startup so early. In the past, Isaiah was actually already public, so they're actually on the NASDAQ or Pink Sheets or whatever. Not even sure if you guys know what that is, but if you do, yeah, it's just a smaller trading. So they were public, actually doing well now. I just saw that they're trading at $6 and plus, but anyway, uninteresting stuff I'm just mentioning. But Netlify, yeah, they had their seed round. They are hiring all their employees that they want. We're actually at 11 employees. I've actually been saying 10 for the past few weeks, and I just counted this morning. And yeah, we're at 11. And yeah, not growing any more employees, but we're definitely growing as a company for sure as far as our reach and what we're doing. I'm very much looking forward to being in Atlanta and speaking at ConnectJS. Actually, I didn't even mention that. I'll be in Atlanta in October. So if you guys are in the area, reach out to me. Maybe we could do lunch. If you reach out to me, I will make time to meet with you. And yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. Looking forward to another conference that I'm just waiting to confirm in November. And yeah, it's been real. I mean, it's super exciting. It's almost, I'm very happy with the change I did. I was kind of not sure of leaving Block as an engineer because I loved it so much. But yeah, this opportunity has really just opened up doors for so many different things. So, but other than that, I'll stop talking about myself. And until we meet again, thanks for listening to this developing story.